joined in studio now by Donegal historian Patrick Bonner. Patrick.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for coming in. Did you have to travel?
No, we stayed overnight. We went to see a couple of films last night. Birdman, which is very good, yeah. And The Theory of Everything, which is a fantastic film.
Was your favourite of those two?
The Theory of Everything. Birdman was a bit surprising. I wasn't expecting a film like that.
But it was peculiar, wasn't it? We're going to talk about that later on, actually.
All right.
I didn't bring you in to discuss that, though. No. We could do about 10 minutes, I think. Right, this is something Yvonne mentioned to me, and I'm going to be completely honest. Something I'm completely unaware about, so I'm looking forward to the education. Atlantis was a community that it came to Burton Port, also known as the Screamers. Tell us about them, or as much as we know.
They were called the Screamers. I'll come on to why they were called the Screamers. They came to Burton Port in 1974. And Burton Port at the time was a fishing village, a very successful fishing village. And they were coming from out of the 60s, an alternative therapy, alternative culture movement led by a woman called Jenny James. And she brought, shall we say, some change and a splash of colour to Burton Port. They stayed in the house in Burton Port probably for about 2 or 3 years, and then they bought property on the island of Innisfree. They were getting too much attention from the media and from the guards about what was going on in the house. Now, what was going on in the house was, the screaming came from what was called the alternative primal therapy, which had been established by a guy called Arthur Yanoff in the States. And the idea was that you would try to get back to your birth experience and to relive your birth, and to break down all the barriers that modern society had created in you. And there were lots of different therapies they used. One of them was a dynamic meditation, which would mean lots of screaming and getting out the anger and getting out the real feelings. And, of course, the local people were a bit stunned by this.
Well, this would have created quite a stir, wouldn't it? Because people from the outside coming in with this, what probably seemed a strange way of going on. I presume there was some interaction with the community trying to enroll people as well. Would that have happened?
I don't think that would have been, it wouldn't have been that successful. People locally actually were very friendly to them. There was obviously some kind of shock to start with, particularly as they actually painted the outside of the house. It's a big white house in Burton Port at the time.
And what colour did they paint it all?
No, they painted a huge earth goddess on the side gable. They painted big eyes on the top windows and the signs of the zodiac all around the house. So inside and outside the house was a blaze of colour. And they had Atlantis. The Atlantis Foundation was the name of the commune.
But this, I'm sure, must have been seen by some as some sort of threat to religion or some sort of... I'm not saying it was a religion necessarily, but given all that, the painting, what you had, there must have been local people that thought maybe this was an affront to, most likely, you know, being a Catholic.
Yeah, I think... Well, it was a cult, in a sense. I mean, in terms of a definition of a cult. These people coming out of the 60s, where there were lots of different movements. Some of them were devotees of the Bhagwan Rajneesh. Some people were devotees of R.D. Lang, the alternative psychotherapist. And when they came, they were people who had rejected mainstream religions, and they were looking for a way to find themselves, a way to achieve personal fulfillment through a lifestyle. They rejected consumerism. They rejected, in Jenny's terms anyway, they rejected things like drugs and alcohol. And they were just looking for a way to find a better way of living. And in fact, they're still doing it. I mean, they're actually, the commune still exists,
yes.
But not in Ireland anymore.
No. And who joined? When you talk about therapy, was it people perhaps that, you know, were looking for some guidance in life, perhaps felt a bit lost, had issues and would have maybe come in? I know a lot of this is speculation because we don't know, but I'm asking you to speculate. Like, you know, is that how they would have, numbers would have grown, I wonder?
They did have a lot of people in the house. I mean, I imagine at certain stages, there were 30 to 40 people in the house.
Really?
Every bit of floor in the attics and whatever, there was beds all over the place. The kind of people would be attracted to it were people who found Eastern religions and alternative cultures, either established in the UK. They're originally based in London, in Brixton, in fact. Their London embassy was in Villa Road in Brixton. And they would attract people who are just looking for something different and who are just looking to... I think there was a sense of something missing inside them. There's almost like a vacuum. The problem is when you leave a culture which is principally about one religion and you move out of it and you reject that. You're looking for something else to fulfill yourself.
And when you talk about the media attention, do we know what kind of attention they were getting? Because, I mean, you know, what the way things are now, you know, you might cover a story on a Monday, and especially sort of something a little bit like this, you know, not a health issue or something that's on running, but you cover it on a Monday and then you move on Tuesday, perhaps. But they were getting more than that, I imagine.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be too specific about it, but there were certain complaints by perhaps parents or grandparents of people who went to the house about the nature of the therapy. And there were certain investigations by whatever the Department of Health was called in those days. And the guards were called for various incidents. I mean, this is partly why they decided to move from Burton Port itself
to
one of the islands, Innisfree. And they said they were a good number of years in Innisfree. It wasn't until 1987 that Jenny herself left. She went on almost like an 18-month tour on her way to Colombia. That's where they are at the moment, South America, believe it or not. And I'm in occasional contact with her only very recently by email, and her daughter Becky, who visited about a month ago, came to the house.
Did they reflect on their time here then, or what did Becky pass on?
I think people have different views. I've met a few people who've Becky herself remembers it with great fondness. She's a great admirer of her mother. Part of it, I think, is a bit like people remember wars and think, well, that was the best time of my life.
Yeah.
Wars are terrible things, but because of the camaraderie and because people are brought together, because you have a shared experience, you remember it with fondness. Now, some people don't have the same memories. Some people felt that they came there perhaps quite fragile, and they left even in a more fragile state. So, I mean, Jenny herself was a very strong personality. That's all I'll say. She was quite dominant, shall we say.
A caller says, I remember when I was a child, we used to come to Donegal on holidays in the 70s, and I remember my parents talking a lot about them. They lived in the big house, which you've mentioned, with funny paintings on it. We were afraid of our lives when we visited Burton Port. We'd imagine all sorts going on inside the house.
Well, yeah, I think the people who live very locally and who got to know them, for example...
Was it a sort of a free society, like in terms of sexuality, or was there anything to that?
I believe so. I personally can't comment, but I've met a few people locally who said that was one of the attractions of the place. I think it certainly amongst the young men locally it was quite an attraction, because obviously...
Which also would have caused understandable tensions in the community.
Yes, but at the same time, the children that grew up in the house and the children in Burton Port, you know, they got on fantastically. I mean,
and they were schooled locally,
yes,
and everything
else. Yeah. My aunt was a local school teacher, and she used to know some of the children there, and you know, no problem at all with them.
Was the move from the island, as far as we can determine, just a natural progression of their movement, or do we know what happened
there? To be honest, I'm not sure. It's a good question. Perhaps I should ask Becky or Jenny when next in contact. But the move from Innisfree to Colombia, Jenny's written a book about it. She's written lots of books.
Okay.
They tend to be books not written in memory, you know, looking back. They were written from the letters that she wrote at the time.
Okay.
And the one that's called Atlantis Adventure, which is the most recent one she's done, talks about the journey in 87. She went to the Canary Islands, she went to the Caribbean, she landed in Venezuela. And I might not have got the route right here, but she went through Peru, Colombia, and Ecuador, but probably not in that order.
Yes, it is.
She was kicked out of Colombia to start with and had to wait, I think, 6 months to come back in again. But she's been there ever since.
And is there, I think even in this day and age, if they landed, it would be a story. There would be unwanted attention from their perspective.
Yes, it was almost like a spaceship had landed in Burton Port. I mean, if you think of West Donegal in 1970s, it's almost unbelievable to think it's happened. It's a bit like the airport, you know, the airport which started in 86. I mean, if you try to put the airport in West Donegal now, you think people say, "Are you joking?" Mm. In the same way that when the Screamers came to Burton Port, they came to a completely innocent in comparison culture.
And you live in the house now that they occupied.
Yes, we've lived there for about 12 years, I think.
Coincidence? Or were you
complete coincidence? No, but it was a midlife crisis, male menopausal folly. This is back in 2001. And you know, but it's way too big for us now. But
I'm thinking if you could get 60 people in the 70s, it must be huge.
Yeah, we don't live in all of it. We enjoy it.
Do you ever get any callers knocking the door?
Yeah, we do. As I mentioned, about a month ago, Becky.
Of course, Becky. Yep.
Becky, who was Jenny's daughter, she came to visit with her friend Sally Wood. We also had Sarah Sterling, who was Jenny's niece. She grew up in the house. When we first had the house, two people came, one called Graham, and I'm sorry I can't remember his partner's name. Now they had mixed feelings. They thought it was the most wonderful part of their life, but they also felt quite bruised about how it ended.
The texter says they remembered them too. They sounded like old Irish keening when loved ones died.
Well, I've never heard...
That must be the wailing of it, or what have you. It's incredibly interesting, and as you say, it's hard to... I mean, people remember this distinctive house with these, as has been described a few times now, as funny paintings on it, but they were... Obviously, you talked about signs of the zodiac and whatever. It obviously fitted into their philosophy or their mindset.
You'd probably call it New Age now. Mm. And New Age wasn't a term being used in the late 60s, early 70s, but they were into the Earth Goddess... Jenny was like an old style goddess matriarch.
Right.
She ruled the roost.
She was the queen of the hive.
I was going to say the main man, but that's not what I mean. She was the matriarch. She was the founder of the thing. She still is. I mean, she'll still run it. She's in her 70s now, and I dare say, she hopefully slowed down a bit. There was one tragedy, which I'm sure your texters or callers might mention. When they moved out to Colombia, Becky's son, Tristan, was executed, was killed by the local guerrillas out there. And that made me think that they might leave Colombia, but that was something like 14 years ago. But they've stayed there, and they have a farm there, and they have the younger children have grown up there, and it's their home now.
And finally, Patrick, do we have any idea what brought them to Burton Port in the first place? Any indication?
Jenny was looking to find somewhere isolated, somewhere where she could start anew. She didn't want anything to do with capitalism, consumerism, Americanism or whatever. She wanted to find... And it was a complete fluke that she came to Donegal. The local auctioneer, Paddy Campbell... took them round, and she saw this, as she called it, a rambling 12-roomed hotel, and she just fell in love with it. Previous to that, it had been owned by a local family of teachers, and before that, it was Sweeney's Hotel. And within a space of about 6 months, it was transformed into Atlantis.
It's an incredibly interesting story. Patrick, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about it. It's been really insightful, and hopefully maybe touch base with you on another issue in the not-too-distant future, maybe. Okay, it's that time of the year again. It's the Oscar season, and those nominated was announced during the week. To discuss that, we're joined online now by Brian Lloyd, who's movies editor at entertainment.ie. Good morning to you, Brian.
How you doing?
Not too bad at all. Now, the Birdman and Grand Budapest Hotel leading the charge with 9 nominations each. Any surprises there for you?
No, not at all. No, I mean, Grand Budapest Hotel and Birdman were two very, 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 very good films. I think it's more surprising in the best animation category that the Lego Movie was shut out. I honestly thought the Lego Movie would have got a nomination in the best picture as well, because, like I say, it did very, very well in the box office. It did very, very well with critics as well.
And is that why perhaps it got that snub? Because if this was down to moviegoers, it certainly would be in the mix.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And plus, as well, you have to keep in mind that, you know, the average voting member of the Academy is, you know, they're usually over 50 and they're usually older men. So, you know, something like Lego Movie that might resonate with younger audiences. And I don't even mean children. I mean, like, you know, people under 50 would love the Lego Movie. And it really did go over with everybody. But, I mean, for the most part, yeah, I mean, a lot of the nominations have been pretty much what we expected. It is surprised. There have been one or two big surprises. I know one film, Selma, which is this was this film based on the Selma marching, or sorry, the Selma voting march rather. Mm. It was, you know, about Martin Luther King and all the rest. It had a great cast, a great director as well.
And what's even more interesting beyond that is, not least, is that nominated, but for the first time, well, it doesn't happen very often, in the top four acting categories, not a single black person nominated, completely white.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And it's actually spawned a Twitter trending tag, Oscar's So White. I mean, it's in stark contrast to, you look at something like the Golden Globes, which was only there a couple of days ago, and that's, you know, far more progressive. Like, there's a much wider field of play there. There's much more diverse, you know, candidates and all the rest of it. And it's just when you see something like Golden Globes, which is really doing its best to be progressive, and, you know, be as inclusive as possible, then you look at something like the Oscars, and it's a lot more stodgy, and it's a lot more kind of conservative. So,
and Selma should be in there on merit, which, you know, regardless of the race question, I mean, there are many people who feel it should be. One of the most remarkable films of the year is Boyhood. It's got 6 nominations, but the fact it was filmed over such a long period of time, it's incredibly unique, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. It was shot over 13 years, and the director, Richard Linklater, who did Dazed and Confused, he did School of Rock, did any number of very, very well-received films. But, yeah, he would shoot for something like a week every summer for a period of 13 years. That's unheard of. I mean, that has never been done before in film history. There has never been a film like it. And if you haven't seen it, I think it's going to be re-released in cinemas for the next couple of weeks. You might see it in your local cinema. If you haven't seen it, make the time and go watch it, because it is absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant.
It topped a lot of people's best of 2014. It certainly topped mine anyway.
Oh, superb. And, now, another an interesting aspect to the nominations too is a lot of the films are based on real life or real life people, the likes of The Imitation Game, American Sniper, The Theory of Everything, and there are more. Is that just really where, you know, the Hollywood trend has been going over the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, biopics typically tend to do well in Oscar season. It's just, they just seem to go for that sort of thing, you know. I mean, it would be very, very rare if a genre picture would get a nomination. Like, I mean, the last time a horror film got nominated for Best Picture was all the way back in 1991 for Silence of the Lambs. Mm. The Dark Knight, you know, a lot of people thought that was going to get nominated. It didn't. You know, so, yeah, I mean, more often than not, biopics typically tend to do well.
And your take on Birdman, Brian, presumably you've seen it. A quirky comedy. It's very well shot. It's got an interesting way of, you know, the film comes across in an interesting, different kind of a way. What's your take on that? Will that top or be up there in your 2015 list, do you think?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely it will be. Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very interesting film, you know, that sort of way. Like, it's shot very differently. It looks very differently. It's not unlike anything you've seen before. But I don't know. I kind of wonder, like, how it'll go over with audiences, you know, that sort of way. Because, I mean, you can kind of look at it and think, oh, that's going to be brilliant, and then nobody turns out to see it, you know, that sort of
it
way.
It might be more of a Saturday night DVD film rather than a cinematic trip sort of a thing.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
So for you then, on merit, obviously we have to exclude the likes of Selma because it's not shortlisted in the top categories. Your best picture, what would you go with?
Oh, I'd go with Boyhood, absolutely. Yeah. I'd go with Boyhood. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I think if you're putting down money, I'd say the safe bet is with Boyhood. But then again, something like Grand Budapest Hotel, that did very well at the Golden Globes. That won in its category for Best Comedy or Musical Film. So, you know, it could potentially get a look in. We could be very much surprised, and you could see something like American Sniper walk away with it. It's unlikely, but
Yeah, and the other films we didn't mention, the likes of Foxcatcher, Interstellar, and Whiplash doing very well. Very finally, you know, we do know even an Oscar nomination can be enough to sort of breathe new life into a film, but the Oscars are going to have to change, aren't they, if they really want to be the litmus test of what is and isn't a very good film?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, people are already predicting this year that the Oscars are going to be the least watched Oscars in the past 20 years. Yeah, it's very much a case that they really do seem to be out of step with you know, audiences' taste, and also as well the fact that, you know, there are other films out there that, you know, maybe flying under the radar that need and deserve their attention, you know. But you know, I mean, the voting cast, if you like, in the Academy they're quite entrenched, and they're not going to be going anywhere anytime soon. So
that's the truth.
Unfortunately, I think for the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to kind of get these kind of very rote, very predictable nominations. Unfortunately,
well, we can rely on people like yourself, Brian Lloyd, movies editor at entertainment.ie. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
At the Northwest Hearing and Mobility Clinic, we want you to be sure that the hearing aids you choose are exactly right for you. That's why we let you take home and try out hearing aids in the actual situations where you might need them. You decide what works best for you before committing to buying. For a free hearing aid demo, contact us at Northwest Hearing and Mobility Clinic, Neil T. Blaney Road, Letterkenny, on 91208222, or visit nwhc.ie.
See what's on offer at Letterkenny IT before you make that all-important CAO decision. With modern campus and state-of-the-art sports facilities in Letterkenny and Killybegs, our focus is on equipping students for their career, with almost half of our programmes containing work placement. Over 3,500 students are attracted to Letterkenny IT by our commitment to their future. Visit lyit.ie, email admissions at lyit.ie, or call Irene on 074-918-6120.
When you're up to 90, huh. Listening just fast as lightning.
You could say there are 90 reasons to call 11890 for directory inquiries, but you only need one. 11890 is cheaper. 11890, cheaper directory inquiries. See 11890.ie.
Two tickets to the cinema. Popcorn, parking, babysitter, sweet holy moly, how much was that?
Okay, so Elaine is rarely thinking about us.
Most expensive night ever.
But we're always thinking about her. And when she picks up her Bord Gáis energy bill...
Okay, let's see this now.
We're on. She'll remember she was able to freeze her electricity rates for up to 2 years. And also got €50 back for signing up online to our fixed rate plan. Which helps.
Actually, this month is not bad.
And back to not thinking about us.
Maybe I should treat myself a bit more.
The only fixed-rate electricity plan for new and existing customers. It helps if it's Bord Gáis Energy. Call 1850 495 495 or visit bordgáisenergy.ie. Direct debit and early exit fee apply. Visit bordgáisenergy.ie for full terms and conditions. Closing date, February 13th, 2015.
You're very welcome back to the Weekend Edition. Irish animated movie Song of the Seas among the nominees for the 2015 Oscars. The movie was nominated in the Best Animated Feature Film category. And despite being tipped to land, that's going on to some other stuff. I'll just focus on this. So I was going to end up talking about Jennifer Aniston. But I'm not interested in Jennifer because I'm interested in Kevin Savercht. Kevin, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
What age are you, Kevin?
I'm 6 years old.
Six. Very good. Now, it's a very exciting time for you because you feature, your voice features in the film Song of the Sea, doesn't it?
Yes, it is.
Tell us what you do in it.
I had my mummy, the mummy, in the movie, and then I...
And do you have to sing in a song? Do you sing with other people or are you just on your own, Kevin?
No, I don't do any singing.
I don't do any singing.
Oh, you're the voice?
He's just voice.
Right, I'm going to have to speak to the lady that told me you were coming in because she told me you sang, but you don't. You actually voice the character.
Yeah.
This is a film. It's about two children, Ben and Saoirse. Saoirse, are you one of those?
I'm Ben.
Oh,
Ben.
Right. So you're the star of the show.
He's little Ben. He's whenever Ben is a child.
And you're also hearing the voice of Helen, who's Kevin's mum, who's done more research on this than me, obviously,
Is
great. What was going to ask you? I saw pictures of you on a red carpet.
Yeah.
For a premiere of this film. What was that about?
That was just to watch the movie.
And you had to get on an airplane, did you?
No.
Was it? Yeah. You did, and you flew over to London.
Hmm.
And was the photographers there taking pictures? And
yeah, there was a big helicopter.
Really?
Doing it.
Wow, fantastic! And when you were watching the film, and you could hear your voice when you were little Ben in the film, how did that feel?
That felt very nice.
Yeah?
Because there was Nora there to remind me of my lines, and she showed up little puppets to remind me.
Oh, brilliant. And did you have to go into a studio to record your lines?
I had to go into a little room.
Something like this with a big microphone in front of you?
Yeah, just smaller.
And did it take long?
No.
So you didn't have to keep doing it over and over and over again?
No. I didn't have to do it.
Helen is Kevin's mum. She's in with us as well. Helen, you must be so proud.
Yeah, I'm really, really proud.
He's a fantastic fella, isn't he?
Yeah, he did so well. He was only three whenever my brother, he first recorded him just on his phone.
Yeah.
They'd already done auditions and they hadn't chosen the voice for Little Ben. And then they recorded him on, my brother recorded him on his phone when they were just playing. I didn't even know.
Tell us a little bit about this, the storyline of the film, Helen.
Yeah, it's a lovely story. It's about a little boy called Ben, and it starts off with Kevin doing the voice of Little Ben. It starts off at the beginning of the film, he's very, very little.
Mm-hmm.
His mummy's pregnant and they're painting a big mural and they're having lots of fun, and you kind of really see them as a happy family and how happy they are. And then there's a little bit of a tragedy because the mummy, she runs out of the room and Kevin has to be like, Mom, and he's frightened. And then she has her baby, but she turns into a seal. She's a Selkie. She goes into the sea, she turns into a seal, and she leaves the baby on the beach, and the daddy brings the baby back and introduces it to Ben. And Ben doesn't really like the baby very much because he thinks that's the reason his mummy is gone.
Mm.
And then that's really the end of Kevin's part.
And then it
the
goes
film.
On.
Then it goes on to him being a bigger boy and the adventure they have together.
And your uncle was involved in directing the film, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Do you think he did a good job?
I think he did.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And can you believe that the film's going to, I mean, the Oscars, you know, they're like, they're the biggest thing ever in films.
I know that.
Do you think you're going to be able to go?
Mm-hmm. No, we're not
going to
go.
No.
No.
Oh, Mum. But you'll be able to watch on the telly anyway, hopefully.
Yeah.
And is this something now you want to do more of, Kevin? Would you like to be an actor, do you think?
I think, yeah.
Hmm?
Yep.
Very good. You've got the taste for it now. The director of the film, Tom Moore, is on the line with us. Tom, I know you were just listening in, but I'm not going to let you go without saying hello.
Hello, how are you? I wanted to hear my little nephew Kevin on the radio. I'm so proud of him. He did a fantastic job. And it's a long time since I recorded him on the iPhone and sent it to Nora, the voice director. He was just explaining there a little bit how he worked with Nora. And he did a really fantastic job. And it's just lovely to have his voice part of the film.
And what a lovely voice he has as well, too. And naturally, you're lucky to have someone.
The film is set up in Glencullum Kill. You know, the story starts up in Glencullum Kill, up in Donegal. And so it's nice that Kevin has sort of started to acquire a little bit of the local accent as well, you know.
Mm. When you got the news that you were Oscar nominated, what was your reaction?
Well, I just sort of, because we were nominated for our last film, I really didn't think lightning could strike twice.
Yeah.
And I could see that the lineup was so amazing. I really didn't think there was any chance that we'd have there be space for us with the amazing films that were there, and somehow we got nominated, and things like Lego Movie and Book of Life didn't. So just really honoured to be on the list.
It's fantastic. And you'll be heading over, I presume, Tom.
Yes, yeah, myself and the producer Paul Young will be over now nearly for the month of February, really.
Because there's a lot of work involved in the background of promoting these films and getting. Isn't there? There's a lot to that, isn't there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I already did 7 weeks out there just working for the nomination and showing the film to all the different members of the Academy that we could, and showing it in different studios and stuff like that. And then we had the release in New York, Los Angeles and Toronto already as well. So there was a lot of work just in that. But now the next, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, we're just sort of, we'll give it a push for the win. You never know.
And Tom, texts coming in. People want to know how they can see it, where they can see it. Is there, have you any info on that locally?
Yeah, well, the thing is, it'll be released in Ireland at the Galway Film Fly in July. And
right.
We're going to have 65 copies out across the country, 30 in Irish and 35 in English.
Oh, brilliant.
And I really hope Irish audience will come out and support it now when it gets released. I mean, we had to release early in the States to qualify for this year's
Oscars.
To get
into the season, sort of, the loop.
Well, it's the way it goes.
Yeah.
We knew there was 2 Pixar movies coming up this year and stuff. So we said last year, even though it was a tough year and a lot of competition, it was probably a better year to come out. So it came out early in the States, but here in Ireland, we're going to bring it out in the summer and give it a good old run in the summer. So hopefully people will come and watch it.
Fantastic, Tom. Thank you so much for having a quick chat with us. I know you wanted to listen to Kevin, but we couldn't let you go. Kevin, so what are all your friends saying to you? I mean, they must be all asking you tons of questions. And
yeah, they are. They really are.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Are you like a superstar?
Yeah, everybody thinks I'm making up a really good movie.
Yeah, and they can't wait to see it now in the summer.
Yeah.
And your Uncle Tom was saying how proud he was of you too.
Okay.
When he was on the phone.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming in. I suppose you've got loads of girls now, do you?
Yep.
Oh, you're supposed to say no.
No.
You're very, very good. I've just a feeling we're going to be chatting again in about 10 or 15 years, or even before that when you're in your next film.
Okay.
Because you definitely have it.
Okay.
All right, thank you so much, Kevin, for coming in. You're a great wee fella. Fella, actually.
Okay.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say the word I said in the beginning.
Thank you for inviting me.
Okay. It's our pleasure. And Mum Helen, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
You've got a real diamond there. I think.
I know, he's fantastic. He really is.
Okay, we'll be back with more after the break. Thank you. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Now we are talking to Jennifer Dorn, who's Head of Research and Communications at NCSE. This is as it relates to a new pamphlet out providing information for parents and guardians of children of and young people with autism spectrum disorder. A very good morning to you, Jennifer.
Hello.
Now, tell us a little bit about the NCSE firstly, if you don't mind.
Sure. The National Council for Special Education has a number of roles. One of those roles is to provide additional teaching supports and special needs assistance support to schools. We also provide policy advice to the Minister, conduct research and provide information. And it's in the context of our information and provision role to parents and to those in the education field that we're trying to raise awareness around the information that we have available for parents.
A lot of times for parents or guardians, it may be identifying that there may be an issue or seeking help for the first time. In other words, perhaps accepting that I perhaps need to have my child assessed.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, the parents that we would have dealt with and met over the years have told us that they do find it quite difficult to find information on how to get access to resources, how to get their child needs assessed, etc. So what we have done is we've pulled together a lot of material that's tailored specifically for parents of children with special educational needs. And one of the first things that we would say to parents is if you suspect your child may have some form of a learning or a learning need or a special educational need, that they should first of all go to their local GP or their HSE local services to try and get the needs of the child assessed.
Because we do know the earlier it's identified, the earlier there is intervention, the better.
Oh, absolutely. And the research is very clear on that, that the earlier you identify the need and get intervention, the better the outcomes are for children. So that's the first thing that we would say to parents is to make contact with their local health services.
Perhaps maybe you can briefly tell us what parents or guardians should be looking out for in young children if there is a concern that perhaps autism spectrum disorder may be present?
Well, it's very different, obviously, for individual children, and I'm not a clinician, but if there is a suspicion there, the child may be acting slightly differently to other children. They may not be achieving the milestones that children may be expected to achieve at particular ages, and parents really realise that at very different phases, depending on whether they have an older brother or sister or some of their friends in the community that may have children that are advancing at a different stage. It can be very difficult to put a definitive age time on that, but parents should, when they do suspect so, go to their local health services. Really where our role though kicks in is once that has been assessed and once you know your child has a disability and you're preparing them to get ready for school, that's really where our services would kick in.
And tell us a bit about those services.
Okay, well if a parent has a child who has a disability and they want to determine what type of school one of the informations that we have is a booklet that parents can use to help them and to inform them on making a decision about school. So say, for example, they want their child to go to the local mainstream school. We would say that mainstream school is the best provision for children. However, there are other options for children who may have more complex needs, and that might be a special class in a mainstream school, and special classes can have lower pupil-teacher ratios. or it may be a special school which also has lower pupil-teacher ratios.
That's a very big and a very difficult decision for any parent to make, though, isn't it?
Indeed, yes. And that's why we have, ultimately, the decision is the parents in consultation with professionals. And what we would say to parents is to be as familiar with the options that are available to them. So you, as well as having lower pupil-teacher ratios, there's also what we know to be special needs assistants who provide support to children with significant care needs. And there's ratios for special needs assistants to pupils in these special classes and these special schools. But a lot of parents will want their child to go to their mainstream local school with their brother, with their sister, or with their friends. And if they choose that option, there are also special needs assistants available in the mainstream schools.
And are they available? Do we have sufficient resources in that regard? Because this has been an issue in the past, Jennifer, hasn't it?
Yes, there have been some reports, which is interesting, because when you look at the figures in terms of the SNAs, there's been an increase year on year in the number of SNAs to an all-time low allocated last year of just shy of 11,000. And recently there was an announcement for an additional 365 SNA posts in the budget, the government budget last year. There's also, though, resource teaching hours and supports available for students with disabilities. The resource teachers are the specialist teachers who actually support the class or the subject teacher in educating children with special educational needs. And if you have a particular diagnosis, you'll automatically get access to a particular number of hours of resource teaching support. And those types of supports are available in all mainstream schools throughout the country. And one of our roles through our special education needs organisers is to assess the need for those those services and to provide schools with access to them. So these booklets that we have, one I mentioned is to help parents to choose the right school for their child. There are a series of other booklets and leaflets that we have. So say, for example, if you're a parent of a child with indeed autism or with a general learning disability or a physical disability, we have specific leaflets that parents can access on our website or through our special educational needs organisers that will outline the types of supports that will be available and how they might go about accessing those supports. It really is important that parents are aware of this as soon as possible.
Because it can feel a lonely and a helpless place, but what the pamphlet I have in front of me proves, not least the support of the National Council for Special Education, but there are many, many groups out there, and it's a case of connecting the parents with them.
That's correct, yeah. We have listed in most of the leaflets the types of support and advocacy groups that are available, and we would encourage parents to make contact with these agencies. We also, towards the end of last year, have organised around the country. At this stage, there's been over 50 of them, information sessions for parents of children who've recently been diagnosed with a disability, and they're being delivered by our special education needs organisers. So while those organisers may be meeting parents on a regular basis, and while we have these information leaflets available, we felt that it was useful to have sessions with groups of parents where the CNO could describe what's in these actual information leaflets, talk them through with the parents, answer any questions that they may have. And the parents have really found this session very useful because they also get an opportunity to talk to other parents in the vicinity at the session who have a child with a similar type needs, and that acts as a bit of a community network for parents as well.
Okay, Jennifer Dorn, thank you so much for coming on the program with us. It's been very informative.
You're very welcome.